Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Colorado made history as one of the first states to expand overtime protections for farm workers. Well, now Colorado is one of the first in that group to roll back the protections. Our Angelie McCall explains why Republicans and some Democrats say it wasn't working.
It's a debate we've heard 5 years ago in 2021, now again in 2026.
Seemed like a thoughtful, reasonable approach to find a bit of a compromise.
Republican State Senator Cleve Simpson sponsored Senate Bill 121. It reduces previous overtime regulations set for farm workers just 5 years ago.
Look, I've said this very publicly, that I would not have run a bill like this if I thought on balance it hurt the ag workforce.
Overtime currently kicks in for farm workers at 48 hours per week. This bill raises it to 56 hours. It passed by one vote in the House, as some Democrats voted with Republicans to overturn the 2021 overtime expansion rules.
Let's be very clear. This was Democrats who joined Republicans, some Democrats who joined Republicans to be able to take away a right and single out a group of people.
Alex Sanchez with the nonprofit Voces Unidas says this is less about helping farmers and providers than laborers.
It goes decades into our federal policies, the racism within our federal policies as to why we treat Black and brown people differently when it comes to some of the hardest jobs in this country that no white American is doing anymore.
Simpson says the bill came out of conversations that seasonal workers were missing out on pay when farmers stopped scheduling beyond the current 48-hour threshold, in turn leaving workers with less money than before the overtime expansion rules.
The seasonal approach is where, you know, I heard from farm workers and producers both that just said, look, this isn't working, this ratcheting down, you know, from 60 hours to 56 to 48.
It's an argument that some advocates don't buy, and a decision they say they'll try to fight again in the future.
The bill also increases penalties for farmers and providers who exploit workers, like failing to pay wages repeatedly or misclassifying workers to avoid paying wages or other benefits. Something to note here, Kyle, is that, of course, we have farm workers that work year-round, but really what this bill was meant to tackle was seasonal farm workers, so people who come and want to make money for, say, 6 months, 8 months, 4 months, and they're saying, you know, I'm here to work, my family's not here.
That's the point. That's why they're here.
But, of course, advocates say, you know, why not? Why shouldn't those overtime rules apply to them as well?
All right, Angelie McCall, thank you. Denver, like the city of Denver, is becoming that coworker in your office who keeps hitting reply all, obnoxiously spamming everyone, in this case with emergency alert messages that people don't need. And the experts are worried that Denver's actually making folks disregard those alerts right ahead of what could be a dangerous wildfire season. On Saturday, Denver accidentally blasted out an all-clear alert after an armed robbery near Zunine, Florida. So it was meant to be for like a block or so of homes. It ended up going to everyone within the city limits. You might remember Denver similarly screwed up back in January for a shelter-in-place order that was meant for a small area around DU. Everybody in town heard about it. And our team has tracked a ton of problems with Denver's emergency alerting in the last 9 months, including messages that told people to go get more information on social media. Then the city didn't post information on social media. Experts on emergency alerts say when people get these irrelevant messages, they tend to stop paying attention or just turn off the alerts altogether.
When's the last time you heard a car alarm go off and you saw everybody run out to their car and check? Nobody does that anymore because they've had too many car alarms. They're desensitized, and that's what's happening to wireless emergency alerts.
Denver's 911 center blames the mix-up in January on a software problem. They said they're still trying to determine what caused the issue over the weekend. We're set to sit down with Denver's 911 director later this week and hopefully get some answers. The wife and children of Mohammed Solomon, the suspect in the anti-Semitic firebombing attack on Boulder's Pearl Street Mall, that family could be released from immigration detention this week after they've spent months in limbo. No one's accused them of participating in the attack or knowing anything about it, but the Trump administration targeted the family for immigration violations after the attack. The suspect's wife and five children have been detained at a family detention center in Texas for the last 10 months. The family's attorneys say the suspect's wife and children have had health issues while they've been in detention, and their attorneys believe they are among the longest held at the facility. This afternoon, a magistrate judge recommended their release, citing their, quote, prolonged detention and the government's aggressive tactics in the case. That recommendation from the magistrate judge is scheduled to be heard in federal district court on Thursday. And the family's attorneys tell us they're hopeful that that judge will agree and order the family released. Denver sure got cloudy fast this afternoon. Haze seemed to appear a bit after 4 o'clock, quickly dissipated, left behind a lot of hungry people who'd laugh at just about anything. Behind all that smoke, though, our Mark Salinger found a marijuana industry that's struggling.
Denver's always been a mile high.
Happy 420, man!
But every April 20th, it feels just a little higher.
It's my tattoo that I have. It's a matching tattoo that I got with my husband. It is a marijuana leaf.
You wouldn't know it in the middle of the 420 festival in Civic Center Park.
I'm actually on a 100 milligram edible right now.
But Colorado's marijuana industry is facing some low times.
The marijuana industry has been in a prolonged recession in Denver and across Colorado since it really hit its peak during the pandemic.
Eric Escudero wasn't at the 420 festival, but he does keep track of the trends for Denver's Department of Licensing and Consumer Protection.
Well, the marijuana industry is definitely in Denver in a transition, and this has been going on since 2020.
In 2020, there was $514 million worth of marijuana sales in Denver. That was the peak. By 2025, it was down to $272 million. It's the same trend for the state of Colorado, with sales down more than 40% since their peak in 2021, of more than $2.2 billion.
In the early days of marijuana legalization, you saw that if people wanted to consume, they wanted to take part in this, they from all over the country, they'd come to Denver. And now as legalization has spread, you don't see those people coming like they used to.
Now people don't have to travel to Denver to get their weed.
Because it's legal and it's our right, and we can.
I'm smoking Santa. I have a candy cane.
Even in uncertain times, there's one thing Colorado can count on.
And celebrate cannabis 365 days a year.
4:20 p.m. on 4:20 will always look like this.
Snoop Dogg and Ice Cube are performing at Red Rocks tonight. Wiz Khalifa was there last night. Juicy J was there. Kyle, I think that's what we call economic stimulus around here.
Yeah, I was about to say some stimulus is what a number of those folks could use. Okay, the vibe, though, it's nothing like what it used to be.
It was much bigger, and the 420 Festival this year, talking with organizers, there's also all of that construction going on in Civic Center Park, plus it's a Monday.
Yep. Mark Salinger,
with what you will.
Came back smelling like a party today. Thank you, Mark. Let's turn to meteorologist Chris Bianchi. Chris, is it an urban legend, or am I remembering a year in my mind when you could actually see the 420 haze in downtown Denver on the weather radar?
3 years ago, Kyle, you could see actually the cloud on the radar. It was able to pick it up. And as you mentioned, it's kind of a sign that's kind of gone downhill. We were actually asked Mark to take a photo if we were able to see a cloud in downtown Denver. Couldn't see it today. But Kyle, there was an air quality alert issued for Denver, Colorado at 4:10 p.m. on 4:20. But the reason being good old-fashioned ozone action alert as that ozone gets baked into place, not the different kind of baking going on in Denver. 70s, 80s Eastern Plains today, 50s and 60s in the high country, a good 20 degrees above average for much of the states on this Monday, and that's thanks to this ridge of high pressure, but low pressure moving in, and that will lead to a concerning fire weather outlook for particularly Wednesday and early Thursday. And there's already a fire weather watch that's up for the Eastern Plains, but the concern here is those winds could gust up in some cases, especially in southeastern Colorado, up to 60 miles an hour. I don't have to tell you how dry it's been, how warm it's been. It's going to be one of those kind of a bit more concerning setups for Wednesday in particular. So we have a potential weather impact alert coming up on Wednesday. Temperatures in the 80s. And then later on this week, those temperatures drop back into the 50s with some meaningful moisture likely on Sunday and Monday. Fingers crossed. We need it.
Thank you, Crispy. Your generosity never fails. Your latest weekly Word of Thanks micro-giving project raised about $50,000 for the NAPI Project in northern Colorado, which allows the Food Bank for Larimer County to distribute tens of thousands of diapers and wipes each month to families in need. And tonight, there is a new way to track the impact of your giving, $18 million worth over 6 years, and also to see where exactly in Colorado you have helped our neighbors. You can go to wordofthanks.org. That's also where you can now nominate a nonprofit that is making an impact in Colorado. And as a reminder, I review every one of those nominations personally. So swing by wordofthanks.org and just take a look at all the good that you've done. Denver Pride is going to look a lot different this year. New location and funding challenges as companies walk away from diversity initiatives.
We've seen organizations that have been with us for a long time that said, hey, we're not going to be able to do this. And we've seen new ones come in.
Pride's organizer sits down for a conversation about whether Pride should be corporate at all and whether it's still relevant today. And state legislators want new rules for AI's impact on children. Hey, there's the music we know and love. Next. Our next conversation tonight is with the Coloradan in charge of Denver Pride. Denver's Pride celebration in June is at a crossroads, displaced from Civic Center Park and Colfax due to construction, operating with less than half the corporate support that it had before the Trump administration and many businesses turned away from DEI programs. Denver Pride this year will be scaled down from 2 days to one and held on 16th Street. I sat down today with Kim Salvaggio, the CEO of the Center on Colfax, which organizes the event.
This year feels better. It's not to say that those big corporations have come back. It's that I think we're getting more connection with maybe some more local ones, even smaller donations. Those add up to big dollars sometimes.
How do you view the tension between the idea of Pride born of protest now with corporate sponsorship, right? Mm-hmm. Like it takes money to put on events, but at the same time, there's that aspect of like this act of resistance brought to you by, and that's weird.
There's a social responsibility for us in who we take money from. We did a lot of community listening and came up with a vetting process for anybody that offers us money, which we have community members on that committee to help us determine, is this person offering us money? Are they aligned with the LGBTQ community? Are we aligned? Are they aligned with our mission, which is to engage, empower, and advance the livelihood of LGBTQ people in Colorado? That vetting process is something we take very seriously. Could we run Pride without corporate sponsors? No, we couldn't.
We've seen around the country a number of cities, for one reason or another, lose their Pride Fest, step away from their Pride Fest, right? Knoxville, Tampa, mm-hmm. Tucson. Mm-hmm. They had a very old event there in Tucson. Mm-hmm. Is Pride still relevant in the way that it was in years past? And how is Denver going to hold on to it when other cities lose it?
It's a great question, and I think it's actually one of the ones I get asked more than not, is Pride still relevant? So 52 years ago, Denver Pride started. And the mission when Pride started, not just at Stonewall, but here, was about our civil liberties, it was about our freedom, and it was about us living authentically who we are. That, to me, is just as true today as it was 52 years ago. We are still in a place in our country where we have over 400 pieces of active legislation that is against our LGBTQ community, specifically our transgender and youth. To me, Pride is more relevant this year than it ever has been. If that is the amount of legislation happening in this country to set the empowerment and the authenticity of our lived experience, we still need Pride. Pride is still a protest. It is still a celebration. It is still about our visibility as a community to come together. I am not willing for that to go anywhere. Not just for me.
In our full 17-minute conversation, we get into some of the physical changes that are happening to Pride this year in Denver, and we also talk about the November ballot issues impacting the LGBTQ community. You can watch the full interview on the next YouTube channel or on 9news.com. Today marks 27 years since 13 people were killed inside Columbine High School. Colorado and America were forever changed. Then a 14th victim died last year from the injuries she suffered that day. For the last 10 years, Columbine students have taken part in a day of service to honor those lives, started by the Columbine High School community. And the day brings together students, staff, alumni, and volunteers to perform acts of kindness.
I just wanted to be here because I had family that was in the tragedy, and it just makes a difference coming here for our community and what everything they do for us, we do for them. So it's just like it's a family here.
More than 1,200 students signed up this year to help around the community. Now take a moment, as we do every year, to reflect and remember the 14 lives lost. So last week, we told you about the one deciding vote in Netherlands' race for mayor. They did a hand recount today, and the result did not change. Mayor pro tem Nicole Sterling is going to be the next mayor in that delightfully funky little town in Boulder County. After election night, current mayor Billy Giblin led by one vote. After six voters cured their ballots, like fixed issues post-election, as you're allowed to do, Sterling was up by one vote. The automatic recount was done by hand this morning. Official results show that Sterling won 261 to 258. Colorado's legislators and state lawmakers across the country have struggled to put guardrails around the fast-growing artificial intelligence industry. Colorado's first-in-the-nation bill regulating AI has been stalled time and time again after pushback from the governor. Now state legislators are trying to pass new protections against AI's harms, focusing on potential issues for kids and teenagers who talk to chatbots. Democrats have a bill moving through the state house that would add new restrictions on how AI chatbots interact with minors, especially in conversations around mental health and ideas of suicide. Under this bill, AI platforms would have to take certain steps if the platform thinks that a user is a minor, like regularly reminding them that they're talking to AI, not a human, directing them to mental health resources if they express an intent to hurt themselves, and preventing them from generating sexually explicit content. The bill's sponsors say it's just a first step toward broader protections, but this bill's been narrowly tailored, trying to get the approval of Democratic Governor Jared Polis, who's hesitant to regulate big tech.
We understand that there are concerns with this bill. What we are trying to do is incredibly difficult. The pace in which AI is changing not only our lives, but the technologies in which we interact moves faster than legislation can in this building.
I think it's no secret how the governor feels about regulating big tech. We want to get something signed this year and recognize that as this technology continues developed, we might have to come back next year and try to pass something stronger.
Each violation of the law would be punishable by a $1,000 fine. Still has to pass the full House and Senate before heading to the governor. Bringing in feedback tonight, Nine News Director Mallory Davis. Here's the deal. Mallory has directed every single show at Nine News. This is the last one that you had yet to do. The very last one. Every show from 4:30 in the morning, 10 p.m., our political debates, all the stuff. She saved the best for last, or she had been avoiding us all of these years. Your feedback is next. Feedback tonight from Heather in Vail, who writes, loved your interview with Kim Salvaggio. Heather says, I'm not part of the LGBTQ plus community, but can say that this kind of respectful dialogue is sorely lacking in segments of society, and it is appreciated. Well, I appreciate the note, Heather. And I appreciated Kim's willingness to tackle some of the tougher issues around Pride these days, like whether it remains relevant, what it is in terms of a protest or a celebration or some combination, and what role corporations have to play in that. This feedback via text. I came in from feeding the horses my wife had next on. I'll be filing for a divorce. Well, you sound like a real peach, but at least you help with the chores. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.